So this is Good Charity, Bad Charity. I'm David Prest.
I'm Camilla McGibbon.
I'm Keith Davis.
And I don't usually say I'm Alex Scales.
We'll keep this one in, I think. Alex is our silent partner, but she'll be joining us later. That's Alex Scales from the Centre for Charity Effectiveness. The subject that we're talking about today is one of the things that we will still be talking about in many years' time, the effects of the COVID-19 outbreak of 2020 and on mental health, and specifically the mental health of our children. And I just want to throw in a stat. This is adult statistics from Cambridge University, that since the pandemic, 60% of people have felt anxious, 50% of people have felt hopeless, 10% of people have felt lonely. And if we look at the effect that it's going to have on children's mental health, who knows whether it's a time bomb or not, but you can see that there is going to be some sort of effect, surely. Keith and Camilla, what strikes you about the conversations that have been going on around mental health in our children?
Well, I think that generally children have always thought of school as an exciting and a safe space. That isn't true for everyone, of course. But children have had weeks and weeks off school, then weeks and weeks back to school. And children always want to know, are we there yet? Where am I supposed to be now? And a lot of parents, a lot of teachers just can't answer these questions for them.
And also you've got the situation where they're in probably small teaching bubbles, so they can't talk to other people in other classes in their year. A lot of time at home, potentially more time than they would normally have had on screens. And it starts to mount up, doesn't it? Keith?
A lot of children at the moment, certainly the ones at the top end of the school, are under immense pressures because they're doing their exams.
Yeah.
I think it is quite easy to understand how some of them are going to have some mental health issues.
So our guest today is actually somebody who is really deeply immersed in this whole discussion. That's Catherine Roach of the children's mental health charity Place to Be. What are we interested in hearing about?
What I'm really looking forward to talking to Catherine about is how important has it been for her that they've managed to get a royal to be their patron? How did they do it? And what is the benefits that it's had on the charity?
Camilla?
The history of A Place to Be is very much one of having almost to persuade schools that these mental health issues can be recognised, they can be dealt with within schools. That whole history has now come to a place where they are looking to train massive amounts of teachers. And I'm really interested in how did they get everybody on board? What are they training them to do? And what she sees is the future, then, of the counsellors that work for Place to Be.
OK, let's get going. This is Good Charity, Bad Charity. Catherine Roach, originally trained as a teacher in County Waterford, Ireland, moved into the world of business to complete her MBA before joining that well-known charity breeding ground, KPMG. In 1996, her pro bono support for the National Children's Mental Health Charity, Place to Be, inspired her sufficiently to join the charity to become its chief operating officer and then its deputy CEO. She became chief executive in 2014. Place to Be, it's an extraordinary organisation with over 25 years experience working with pupils, families and staff in UK schools. Its royal patron as of 2013 has been Catherine, Duchess of Cambridge. Their focus is providing mental health professionals to schools and training teachers in mental health provision. Catherine, welcome to the podcast, first of all. Clearly the pandemic has changed your world in a very dramatic way. When did it dawn on you that this was going to have a big effect on children's mental health?
Well, I think I'd start by saying it's been a pretty busy year, and we were sitting in our board meeting, as it happens, back in March when the announcement came through that we were going into national lockdown. So I have that image firmly in my mind, sitting with the exec team and our board and thinking, right, okay, this is it. We are now going to have to go into operating remotely. We provide school-based mental health services, and traditionally, Place to Be is very much embedded in the heart of a school community. So it is about having a physical school project manager, a member of our team, a mental health professional working in the school community, seeing the children every day, connecting with parents at the school gates. And so our thought was, how do we transform this service from that face to face to something that can operate if we're all and our teams are no longer in schools? So we had put some thinking in place around, we would move firstly to telephone support and also thinking about then what we would be able to push online. But to be honest, everything started to move so quickly. And the first step was actually having computers, connectivity, getting the whole thing so that everybody had the right kind of connectivity.
Yeah.
So it all moved pretty helter-skelter, it must be said.
So as of now, what do you assess the main challenge ahead in terms of estimating the size of the impact on mental health for children during this period? What's your take on it?
So there have been phases through this period. During the lockdown period, we heard a lot about loneliness. Right in those early days, there was real concern about basic food. And, you know, we had some examples where our project managers were the first people to actually contact a mum who was living alone with children, really anxious, really concerned. So we had the summer period and then back into school in September. From September, we started to hear about increases in family conflict, domestic violence, and particularly for young people within the secondary school age group. The research is showing they are likely to be the ones hardest hit by this. We're hearing increased concerns around suicide ideation, around self-harm. So some of those really challenging mental health problems.
Camilla.
I think that what children want most is certainty, safety, and what schools have traditionally provided is that place to be safe, to be certain. And at the same time, you have this program called Express Yourself, which is all about expression and which presumably also comes through arts and sport and activity. And we can't do those either. So how can you help to involve children in some sort of way that they might express themselves in a positive way?
So that's Children's Mental Health Week, which we started about 7 years ago. We have a key theme every year. And next year is about express yourself, about your individuality. And in this case, the partnership is with Young Voices. There's research that shows that singing can be really positive
Absolutely.
For mental health. Just as sport, you mentioned sport is really important. I'm a mum, I've got a little boy who's 11. There's no place more important than the football pitch. And he has so missed not being able to play football. So those things are just so important.
Yeah.
So we're hoping to break a Guinness World Record with, I think it's over 300,000 children and young people singing simultaneously.
Oh, wow.
So let's get involved, listeners. The more we can get involved, the better.
That'd be great. That's amazing.
That's astonishing and lovely.
Keith.
Can I just make a mute point here, though, that obviously being in Wales, it's the rugby pitch.
One that I have to support, Keith, being Welsh myself.
And I'm not wearing my green jumper today.
No, that's okay. It's just for my locals who obviously are listening to this podcast. You outlined very well the type of mental health issues that children could be facing, you know, from loneliness to suicide. Do you actually try to address all of these, or do you have to refer some of them to the other professionals in the NHS?
It's really important to work in partnership. And I think that's one of the things within mental health as a whole. We need the services and support in schools working hand in hand with the specialists and with the NHS system. So for Place to Be's whole school approach, mental health, there's a spectrum. And on the one hand, promoting positive mental health and well-being through Express Yourself, through the assemblies, through the whole classwork. That's part of what we can do. And then there's identifying children who may have a mental health problem and who need more specialist input. And in some cases, we can provide that support ourselves in the safety and familiar environment of the school. And then there are cases where we need to refer into specialist services.
What do you think the NHS should be doing to obviously address this issue as well, bearing in mind that GPs could get involved? You know, if I go there, there's an asthma clinic, there's an obesity clinic. Do you think there should be more local services?
Most certainly. Mental health, as a start, is such an under-resourced area. And then children and young people's mental health, even more so. And really, investment in the preventative end of that, the more we can do around that, the better. We know that 50% of adult mental health issues start before the age of 14. 75% can be identified before the age of 18. Mm. And we know we can get in early. And the earlier we get in, then we don't always need the professional specialist service, which comes back to why the school and all of us can play a part.
Interesting. Obviously, as an organisation, you were founded in 1995. I know that early on you had resistance from teachers saying, well, look, pastoral help, yes, but this is something more. How do you find it? Because clearly you've got to work with the teachers' unions to make sure that they are happy about the responsibilities that they're taking on, because we've heard them being frontline workers in many ways, and this really has put them on the front line as well, hasn't it, when you consider the mental health responsibilities as well that they have.
Definitely, I think these last months have shown that schools and teachers are in the front lines. I think it's important that we don't look to try and turn teachers into mental health specialists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. They are there as educators. But there is a part that teachers can play. And children's behaviour is signalling something from the child. And if a teacher is in tune with that and can recognise and spot signs that may raise a concern, they're in a great position to do that. The other thing that's really clear is the pressure and stress that is on teachers themselves. So Education Support published an annual teacher wellbeing index, and that highlights, again, the pressures and challenges that teachers are under, particularly in the current environment.
Camilla?
It sounds to me, Catherine, as though you are advocating strongly, not just for the children now, but for the teachers. Who are you advocating to, and are you being listened to?
For Place to Be as a service delivery organisation, our focus has not especially been, and our expertise has not been, in the world of policy and campaigning and lobbying. We're very much in the front lines providing services, building our evidence base. But as we have grown over the years, we've recognised we have to really step into that space.
Yeah.
So it's both politically, ministers in the government departments, getting them to come visit the schools, hear from children and young people and class teachers, as well as the key civil servants who bring consistency and can help with the policy machine, if you like.
Keith?
With reference to the schools, I see that from what I've read, the schools pay 70% of your contribution and you raise the other 30%. With the fear that budget cuts, because obviously we're borrowing a lot of money at the moment, how do you think they're going to deal with this?
School budgets are always challenging, and without a doubt, that is something that is a concern. And I think whilst there has been a commitment, or we've heard about announcement of funds and a focus on mental health, the real challenge in school budgets is some of the income that a school might have generated that's not a core budget is often what they might use for this, still being seen as a bit of a top-up. So schools that rented out premises, for example, none of that income is there. Increased cleaning costs, that's another area that, you know, schools are having to cover.
Obviously, during this period, you know, there has been a big conversation about mental health in schools. The Duchess of Cambridge and the Heads Together organisation that's been involved in that. And Alex, I think this throws up that question, which is partnerships, about how different charities can work together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been using the Heads Together collaboration when I teach at on the Charity Masters programme at the business school as a real example of, you know, multiple organisations with a shared long-term purpose coming together to really achieve something. So I was interested to hear from you, perhaps, some of the things that that collaboration has enabled your organisation to achieve that you couldn't possibly have achieved on your own.
The Heads Together collaboration has been tremendous and I think a real step forward in terms of awareness and removing stigma around mental health. From a whole campaign about removing stigma, we then were able to move into much more practical projects. So we worked specifically with Young Minds, with the Anna Freud National Centre for Children and Families, and created the Mentally Healthy Schools, which we identified was a resource. There's lots of resources and bits out there. And sometimes if you're a school, you wonder what's quality and where do I find them and which ones do I use? Yeah. So that was a tremendous project to work on together. And then I think the other really practical thing that came from that was the setup of Shout Mental Health Innovations, which is a crisis texting service that's been just really terrific to have and for us to be able to promote into our schools during this period as well.
I'm always intrigued by this. Do you not get in the room on your first meeting when you're all trying to partner together, all you chief execs? Do you not get a little bit of ego here and there, clash of personalities? I mean, it sounds to me like a nightmare. If it was a bunch of radio producers like me gathered together in a room, we'd be fighting within 10 minutes, I'm sure of it.
Well, it's like any team coming together. So when I did my MBA a million years ago, the whole focus was around teamwork. And, you know, we all thought we should just go and rent an apartment together and just all move in. We spent so much time working on joint projects. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So definitely you've got to get comfortable and familiar and get to know each other. And you do that through spending time together. But also there's nothing like a good old deadline and a milestone. And that was one of the things with the Heads Together campaign. We had very clear milestones, deadlines. And, you know, you knew you just had to meet them. The key thing here is it's about the beneficiary and what we're trying to achieve together and the collective impact that we can have, in our case, for children and young people.
Keith.
You're very fortunate to have a patron in a member of the royal family. How did you manage to attract her on, and what have been the benefits to you and your charity?
Well, I'm delighted to be able to say that the Duchess's office reached out to Place to Be. And I think Place to Be has always, right from the beginning, focused on research, evidence, high quality service delivery. I think that is what stands you in good stead in the long term. The benefit for us of having the Duchess of Cambridge is she is so incredibly committed to this area and has taken so much time on visits, listening to children, listening to parents, speaking with teachers, really understanding the issues and the impact that she has had in terms of removing stigma. And again, I go back to Heads Together. It's just taken the stigma away. And to have somebody of her stature talk about mental health, it helps to put a spotlight on an area.
It's interesting, Catherine, when you talk about the Duchess of Cambridge's intervention on these things. And there was quite a moment when, in a public speech, she talked very pointedly about mental health and specifically the issue amongst children. Let's hear that clip now.
A child's mental health is just as important as their physical health and deserves the same quality of support. No one would feel embarrassed about seeking help for a child if they broke their arm. And we really should be equally ready to support a child coping with emotional difficulties. Through Place to Be, I have seen the benefits of offering children support for their mental health in the safety of the school environment. William and I sincerely believe that early action can prevent problems in childhood from turning into larger ones later in life. That is why we're both supporting Place to Be this Children's Mental Health Week, and I hope you'll join us.
So when you hear something like that, what sort of an impact does that really make to an organisation like you?
it means it's okay to talk about something, or it's a topic that then starts to come into, you know, more regular conversation. If again, I go back to the Heads Together piece, that really built a groundswell of public support around we need to do something about mental health. And that really brought some of the political focus to mental health as well, which meant you then got the long-term plan within the NHS that led to the introduction of the green paper around mental health in schools, which has, you know, means the machine starts to move and we start to get a change in the system.
Camilla.
I think that's absolutely true. Keith and I were both involved in Borough Market, and Keith was the CEO and I was a trustee. And we had a number of royal visits, and the press arrived en masse. Some of these visits, by the way, were about the emergencies that happened. But then I remember meeting with Prince Charles and one of the traders saying something to him about a particular sort of food. And he said, I can get a meeting. If you can say you've got the Duchess of Cambridge coming with you, then probably they don't say no.
Well, I think teacher training is a really good example of that. So February last year, the Royal Foundation and the Duchess convened a round table around mental health in teacher training. And you're absolutely right. That round table involved some of the key players in teacher training. In the current system, there is no significant piece on mental health or child development in teacher training because it's quite a packed curriculum, how much you can get into it. But that round table, from that we were able to develop Place to Be's online program, our Mental Health Champions for Class Teachers, which we transitioned everything fully online, pushed out into our schools. We launched in September. We've had over 25,000 class teachers register for that program. So we've seen a huge shift and something that we'd struggled with, kind of getting the momentum behind it ourselves.
Alex.
I wanted to go off on a slightly different tack, but still staying with the mental health. And we've been hearing from so many chief execs in terms of the impact that the last 9 months or so have had on them, their teams, their staff. And I was wondering whether you were able to share any steps that perhaps your organisation has taken to support your own staff's mental health and resilience during this period.
Definitely. That's a hugely important area. Keeping a connection with our teams is so important. So especially in the beginning, we had daily check-in calls. So we were connecting daily. Zoom has enabled so much for us in terms of the ability for an organization with staff based in 400 sites, 400 schools around the country, the power of being able to connect and see each other in a really time efficient way and just thank them. Just say thank you for the incredible, recognize the incredible job they're doing. We've also set up a well-being portal. Staff have done all sorts of things within their team meetings, whether it's well-being breakfasts or, you know, all sorts along those lines, just to create some connectivity and have a mix.
My last question would be, this is the business that you're in of looking after people's mental health. How do you look after your own mental health?
Well, we try and find balance. Standing on the football pitch with four 11-year-olds on a Saturday morning, that's pretty good.
In the snow.
Trying to get that balance of home life, but also connecting with other chief execs across the mental health sector. We've had a call on a weekly basis. That's been really, really helpful and gives you a bit of perspective and sense check.
What we always like to do is sort of finish up the podcast. There's one big question we're going to ask you in a minute, but just give us three learning points that have come out of this experience that you want to pass on to others.
Iterative is definitely one of my favourite words from this, and that comes from development of services for online and in a blended way, but it's also, it's that flexibility, do things step by step, because you can't plan too far ahead in this period. So iterative, definitely. How many times have I said balance? There's got to be balance.
Yeah, yeah.
Home, work-life balance. And I think the piece about partnerships, especially in the mental health sector, which may have been more disparate before, I think this period has really helped to cement and connect things even more so, which also helps in terms of the policy and all of that input as well.
So the big event next year for Mental Health Week is this sort of extraordinary Guinness World Record attempt to become the largest school choir ever associated. And you're picking an absolute classic. Tell us what you're going to be recording.
So kicked off with Billy Ocean and a whole host of other stars. We'll have simultaneous singing with school choirs right around the country singing Bill Withers' Lovely Day and signing Bill Withers. So there's everybody. This is super inclusive in every possible way.
Brilliant. I was going to ask one more question. When you're relaxing and listening to music, who's your favourite Irish singer?
Oh, Val Dunican from County Waterford. There we go.
Val Dunican, Catherine, I think you're overplaying it. I mean, you're really not that old, honestly, Catherine. You should be.
He's from down the road in County Waterford.
That's a very good choice. Okay, we'll let you have that on your desert island. Catherine, it's been a pleasure to speak to you as ever. Thanks a lot. That was fantastic.
Thanks, Catherine.
Great.
So we've been listening to the chief executive of Place to Be, Catherine Roach. Keith, Camilla, Alex, any thoughts?
I think the things that came out for me was the real push about needing to work together with your trustees and your senior team. And I think from what she was saying, they've managed to achieve that. And I think that's a lesson for all chief execs and chairs, actually. I also loved the bit about working in partnership and how you must look at what's best can come out of it, not just what's in it for me.
I think she was lovely. And I think that when you're dealing with mental health, you want people to be approachable. I think she was incredibly approachable, which probably helps in partnership working, probably helps when you're trying to get the Duchess of Cambridge involved, although the Duchess of Cambridge came to them, and maybe there's a reason for that too. So that lack of ego is what I really liked. And yet, a sense also of firmness of purpose. She knows where she wants to go and she knows how she's going to get there.
And understanding their role in any collaboration, it came across as though they had real clarity in terms of the role Place to Be had and what it could contribute to the wider partnership.
There's another thing that's made me start thinking about this is that, you know, you hear her talking about the way that partnerships with other organisations were forged in a very, very quick period of time. And actually, if we look at the Kruger report, you know, there's an admission there that the pandemic has helped focus people's attention on what the end game is, and they've got there that much quicker. And of course, we've seen it in the biggest story of all, which is finding a vaccine quick and getting it distributed quick. And it just strikes me that the one thing that all of the organizations that we've been talking to, particularly during these special episodes looking at leadership through COVID, is the speed with which people will now be able to react. This is going to be the new norm. Is that me being pie in the sky, Alex? I don't know. Do you think this will
have
an
effect? That's really interesting, because it's one of the things that I've heard time and time again from the forums that I host for chief execs, in terms of many of them have really, really enjoyed the much faster pace of working, the quick decision-making in a crisis. Albeit, you know, in very challenging and circumstances that we wouldn't have wished to have happened in any time. But the one thing that they're grappling with at the moment is that it is beginning to move back to a slower pace of working. And how do you adjust that speed and potentially keep it going? They can just take away the faster, neater decision-making process. It's something that they all want to work out how to do.
Camilla?
I mean, Alex, you say that the pace is slowing. The pace is probably slowing because everybody is exhausted. And really, maybe now is a time with a vaccine on the immediate horizon to consolidate so that the pace gets to that point of evenness and balance that we can all manage over a longer period of time.
Should we sign off? So this has been Good Charity, Bad Charity. I'm David Prest.
I'm Camilla McGibbon.
I'm Keith Davis.
I'm Alex Scales.
We give praise be and thanks to our producer, Dan Hardoon, and Whistledown Productions. We thank the Centre for Charity Effectiveness and the City Bridge Trust. If you want to find out more, we're on goodcharitybadcharity.com. The Twitter handle is @GCBCpodcast. From Good Charity, Bad Charity. Till the next time, goodbye.